Welcome to We Earn Media, everybody. Today, we are joined by Kelsey Ogletree. She's an Alabama-based independent journalist covering travel, food, design, and golf. Kelsey's work has appeared in various print and digital outlets, from Midwest Living and Real Simple to the Wall Street Journal and All Recipes. She's also the founder of Pitchcraft, which we'll talk a little bit about later. Pitchcraft, if you haven't heard of it, is a journalist-led membership platform helping PR professionals build relationships with freelance writers and editors in the national consumer lifestyle space. Welcome to the show, Kelsey.
Thank you for having me.
Jacqueline, of course, is also here with us. Welcome, Jackie.
Hey. Hi, thank you. Excited to be here.
Yeah. We're going to talk to Kelsey about an article that she wrote that almost wasn't meant to be. We'll get into that later, though. No spoilers. But I will say that if you're into interior design, which is a topic we haven't really talked about a lot, maybe if not at all, actually, now that I think about it, this conversation will likely be very fascinating to you because it's all about a trending topic in that world. But again, we'll get more into that soon. Kelsey, let's start by having you summarize the article that you wrote for the Wall Street Journal.
Sure. So this piece was probably one of my favorite articles I wrote all last year. It ran in print on December 30th of 2022, and it was 3 pages in the Wall Street Journal Mansion section, and it really fulfilled a bucket list goal for me, which was getting the cover of Mansion on that particular day. So I was really excited about that.
But congrats.
Thank you. The piece was called Sorority House Design in the Age of Instagram and Rush Talk. And so it was really a piece exploring, the major, major design upgrades that sorority houses around the country were getting kind of in the wake of more attention being focused on, you know, sororities, culture in general, and especially around the Rush Talk trend that was all over social media last fall. So, the article really featured 3 different interior designers and a couple different projects that they had in states around the South and some in the Midwest as well, where they really just got into the design details of, you know, why these sorority houses hired them to do this really elevated interior design for these college women who lived in these houses. And then I interviewed, you know, some different contractors, builders, things like that, with, you know, to gather more context around the trend and why this was happening. And kind of the bottom line of the story was that, there's a lot more competition for sororities these days, to get students to become part of their houses. And so design was really a selling point to, you know, convince these women to try to be part of these sororities. And, it was a very far cry from my college dormitory experience. So it was just a really fun and fascinating story to research. And of course, working with the Wall Street Journal is always an amazing byline to get, but just being part of the process where, you know, you help them to arrange photo shoots with your interview sources and all of that, and then see it come to life in print and online was a really amazing experience.
Yeah. Speaking of the photos, just the visual presentation of it on my iPad was so fun to go through.
Beautiful.
Yeah. So were those photos, you mentioned a photo shoot. Did Wall Street Journal send their photographer there or?
Yeah, they did. So for one of the houses that they really featured the most prominently in print, that was an exclusive photo shoot that the journal did. And it was kind of difficult, actually, because the timing of this story, it ran the end of December, but the photo shoot took place like over Thanksgiving week because they needed most of the girls to be out of the house. So that was kind of a, you know, interesting thing trying to help them coordinate all of those things. But I think they ended up doing 1 or 2 photo shoots, and then a couple of the other ones were supplied by the interior designer teams that we featured because it was such a tricky thing to photograph a house, you know, that all these women live in around the school schedule and things like that. So to have it photo ready was a little bit challenging, with so many people living there.
Let's talk about the pitch. Kelsey, you mentioned in our email conversation that you almost deleted it and then you randomly thought about it. I want to talk about specifics like the subject line and other things about the pitch itself because you kindly shared it with us, but tell us about how you just randomly thought about it and decided to pull it up from your personal email.
Sure. So this was a very random thing. And this was actually with a PR firm that I hadn't previously worked with on a story before. And I have an email address that, you know, is very public on my website that I use for all my freelance work, and all my PR pitches go there. But this email happened to come to a, like, my grad school email, which I have filtered into a very old personal email. And usually whenever I get like work related stuff there, I just delete it. So this came to that very old email address in August of 2022. And it wasn't personalized. It just said, good afternoon, colon. And then it had a couple different paragraphs about this interior design firm that was based in Georgia, and two different sorority houses that they had recently worked on. And it didn't even have, I don't even think it had a link to photos or anything. And this is really a good example of just a pitch coming at a really, really good time, because you know, there wasn't anything about it that was, you know, really stood out to me as things that I necessarily look for in a good pitch, which of course is always being personalized. And I don't really know if the subject line, you know, made a huge difference. It said, metal and pedal paves the way for the most beautiful sorority houses at UGA. You know, that in itself kind of sounds like a story that would run like in a local, you know, Georgia paper or something. And so it wasn't really that the subject line caught my attention as much as the phrase sorority houses. And the reason why it caught my attention is because about 6 months prior that year, I had sat next to a woman on an airplane who we got to talking about interior design, and I learned that she specialized in interior design for sorority houses. And I thought, wow, that's such a fascinating niche. Like, I didn't even know there were designers who did that. And so I had kind of, you know, looked at some of her work. And then when I heard that there was another one who was really, you know, up and coming in the same type of design, it just really intrigued me. And I, you know, kind of had the idea then to start researching that idea further as something I could pitch to my editor at Wall Street Journal's Mansion section.
Wow, how serendipitous. That's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it just goes to show that sometimes, you know, as much as you can talk about and, you know, try to follow the exact formula that journalists, you know, say they want for a pitch, that it can just be the matter of really good timing sometimes, and it'll still get through, and that none of that other stuff matters quite as much. I think another thing about the pitch that stood out to me is that it called out right away in the opening about the rush talk trend on social media, which, you know, tying into something that's like a larger social trend is always of interest to journalists, because we want to be able to pitch, number one, you know, a story that can have some data behind it and say, you know, this is actually a trend. And two, you know, our editors want to assign us content that's going to drive a lot of clicks to their respective websites. So anytime you can tie something into something that's trending on social, that's really smart. So I think that's one thing that this pitch did really well too.
So the pitch, it's very interesting too, because it's really long. And they link to two different projects that the interior designer was behind. And I clicked through to the links, and they're Google Drives with the photos of the projects and other information, I'm sure. But yeah, I thought that was really interesting too, because did they send a follow-up?
Actually, I responded to them. What I ended up doing is I forwarded it to the email that I actually use for freelance, and then I responded to the PR team that's in it and said, you know, I was interested in you know, learning more about it. And I don't think, when I'm looking at the very original pitch, I can't remember if it did have photos. I guess it did. It didn't have a ton of photos in there, though. I feel like it didn't give me like as much of a, you know, the houses that they pitched, I don't think we actually even ended up featuring in the story. But they had done some other ones that were more recent. And so this just kind of got, you know, the wheels in motion. And then, you know, we started a conversation about this story from there.
Oh, wow. Huh. That's crazy. And they also, just so our listeners know, they didn't, you talked about how it wasn't personalized. They didn't use your name. They didn't address you by Kelsey. They just said good afternoon, which tells me they potentially sent this to multiple people. I think it says here too that your email is under BCC. So
yeah. And that's a good point that you make. Sometimes I think that PR maybe thinks that writers don't notice that, but I definitely always do. I mean, I think that, you know, what we talk about on Pitchcraft, just and as a foundation of my, you know, values as a freelance writer, is that personalization is everything, and you want to feel like a pitch is crafted to you personally and not just blasted out to hundreds of people. This one definitely didn't feel like that, especially when you can easily tell that you're blind copied. But again, it happened to work out based on kind of what I was thinking about at that time.
Yeah. Wow. I love this example. It goes against everything journalists typically tell us, but it worked, and it led to this incredibly beautiful feature in the Wall Street Journal of all outlets. Oh, wow. Okay, I'm just going through our questions real fast because I'm still blown away.
You know, one thing I was going to mention really quick that was interesting, I have my email exchange pulled up with this PR firm, and would you like me to share the name of the PR firm, by the way?
Yeah, go for it.
Yeah, so when I reached out to this PR professional who was with Charlotte Berger PR, she got back to me right away, and I really liked how she was very transparent, because one thing I had asked is for some more information about the designers, some more examples of images of the completed houses. And then also if there were any other stories that were running on them as a design firm, like recently. And they did a great job of, you know, coming back to me. They had shared with me a piece on Realtor that quoted them, a Martha Stewart article. They had like a radio spot that they even linked to, and then another local publication in Charleston that they'd been featured in. And so I just really appreciated that transparency, because I didn't want to be, you know, thinking about pitching this angle to Wall Street Journal and having them already have pitched it there, or have another writer, you know, already pursuing a story with Wall Street Journal, because that's never, you know, a good look for a writer to double pitch, in my opinion. So I just really appreciated that transparency. And if, you know, we went back and forth, I would say for about a week, just, you know, gathering more information on specific houses and organizing some photos into links that I could share with my editor before I actually ended up pitching it. And it was kind of crazy, because I am looking back at my emails, and we kind of confirmed all the details that I had asked on September 8th, and I pitched it to my editor, and I heard back from her that afternoon that she was interested in the story. So, you know, it was one of those things that, because it was really dialed into that trend, and I think because of the timing too of August back to school, you know, Rush Talk was really coming up again. And even though that story didn't end up running for a few more months, I think it was just, you know, really trending on social at the time I pitched it. So that piqued the interest of my editor. And I think to have a response from an editor the same day that you pitch it now, especially, is really rare. So that was obviously like a very exciting thing for both me and the Charlotte Berger PR team.
In my notes, I was like, publicist did things wrong in the pitch, but really, I mean, the whole social tie-in was genius, and yeah, it obviously got the attention of the editor. So it wasn't, I don't know. It's just cool. I guess like it has me thinking in general. It's something that we kind of preach openly often, Britt, is that there's just no one way to do things.
Yeah,
and you might make a mistake and it might be okay. So it's really cool. Thanks for not deleting her email, Kelsey. Seems like it worked out for everyone.
Well, and it's kind of funny too. I feel like I have to say, for a Wall Street Journal story, you know, if you're going to pitch a writer a Wall Street Journal piece, you really have to be in it and like ready to commit to it with them, because partnership. And I will say, I'm looking at the email chains with that PR team. We had 95 emails in our chain.
Wow.
Throughout the course of that story. There's so much that goes into like collecting additional information, you know, coming back with you know, what sometimes seems to be absurd questions from my editor, and, you know, having hard conversations with, you know, the client. And, you know, sometimes my editor will say, like, I need this fact checked in 2 hours, and it's a Saturday afternoon, and, you know, the PR person has to be in it with me. And so, you know, there's a lot that goes into it. I know we had numerous phone calls getting through this as well, and setting up lots of different interviews and contacts and things like that. So I really appreciated how they were really in it for the long game with me. And I think any publicist pitching a Wall Street Journal writer just needs to be aware of that, that, you know, it's a commitment, and writers want to work with you if you're, you know, willing to be a partner in it, because it is a lot of work.
Yes. Related to that, I had a client that had to hop on an interview on a Saturday morning, and it's just like that sometimes as a publicist. I mean, not everyone, people should not be overworked and like whatever, but I do think there is this advantage as a publicist. If you're able to be flexible with, you know, how much time you give, it can be really advantageous. So that's cool that they're like on board with you and willing to just, you know, answer the questions and get the shit done. You know, that's sometimes what it takes.
Absolutely.
I'm also blown away by how you kind of struck up a conversation with someone on a plane, Kelsey, who also kind of inspired this idea, right? Yeah. Or set the seed for it, or planted the seed for it. Mm-hmm. Did you walk away from that conversation with her contact info? And is she one of the people that you interviewed in the story?
Yes, she was. Did I miss the star that? Okay. Of the story. No, this was someone who has now become a friend of mine. Her name is Liz Toombs, and we met on a plane that we were both heading to the same conference, and didn't realize it until we started chatting. And so that's how I learned what she did. And I, you know, it kind of just stuck in the back of my mind, like, oh, she's just such an interesting person. If I ever have a chance to write about what she does, I would love to. And so it wasn't really something where I felt like I, you know, was wanting to pitch a profile on just her. I felt like I needed a bigger story, which is what most editors are looking for in the national space. And so when this came about that, you know, I could see that there were other interior designers doing this as well. Of course, I went back to her right away and I said, Liz, like, what are the projects you're working on now? Like, do you have recent photos? And she had some great examples of stories. And, you know, one thing that's really funny too is that she actually had a publicist, and I knew that publicist. I'd worked with her before. But throughout the duration of us working together on the story, I never knew that Liz had her own PR. And after the story came out, her publicist actually emailed me and said, like, hey, just wanted to say, like, thanks again for the great story on Liz. I actually work with her, but, you know, since you had a personal relationship with Liz, I kind of wanted to stay out of it and not, you know, claim this as my own win, because this was a personal story based on you two meeting each other. And I just thought that that was such a kind and smart professional thing to do. And of course, she connected with me after the fact, but I just thought it was a really, you know, professional thing, and it made me have much more, you know, that much more respect for her. And I absolutely pay attention to her now when she emails me, because I know that she's very, you know, very mindful of relationships and just really focused on, you know, helping journalists do great work, whether that means her being involved or not. So I thought that was a kind of a cool backstory to it too.
That is a really cool backstory. What is her name? We love giving shout outs.
Oh, yeah. So her name is Deborah Locker.
All right. So, Kelsey, tell us, do you receive a lot of pitches in general?
Yes. I would say the volume has become kind of unmanageable over the past 2 or 3 years. If I don't check email for a couple of days, it's safe to say I have at least a few hundred pitches to go through.
Oh, my goodness. That's a lot. You must have at least 500 from when you left for your vacation. That's crazy. Yes. Let's see. Well, would you say that you open them all? We ask that often, but sometimes we get a lot of answers. We actually, more than often, people say they open every email. How is that for you? Do you do that, or has that changed, I'm sure, since you've started a family?
Yes. I think it's changed, you know, definitely since having a baby in April, but also just over the past year, because of the volume, you know, we can't spend all our days just opening and reading emails. I think we all, you know, experience that feeling of getting really burnt out by sitting at our computer and, you know, having to make so many decisions with what to do with emails. You know, you end up just closing your laptop and getting away from it. So I would say I don't open every email because number one, it's just a matter of time and attention. I need to focus on my actual assignments. But I would say a big thing is be really mindful of your subject line and your opening line as well, because a lot of, you know, writers like myself use a Gmail like email provider, and you can see the first line preview. And if I, you know, notice that it says like dear journalist or hello, the wrong name, or like no personalized greeting at all, I'm very like less inclined to open it unless the subject line is something that I'm really interested in. A lot of times that's how I'll go through my inbox and just see like, okay, which ones of these were actually personalized to me, even if it's just the first sentence, and I'll open those and try to respond to those. But that personalization for me, like, makes a huge difference. And I don't open all the emails that are not personalized.
So when it comes to covering a story that has been sent your way, Kelsey, what's the most helpful thing that publicist can provide you with?
Sure, that's a great question. One thing that I find really helpful, maybe not in the first pitch, but in my, you know, if I respond, one thing that I will usually ask is, where else have you pitched this, or to whom else have you pitched this? And also, like, what is your dream headline for this piece you're envisioning for me? Because that's really helps me to understand like the actual story that the publicist is trying to pitch. And also, I just really love the transparency in, you know, knowing where else they're trying to get this angle out there. So I love to ask, you know, like, where else has this person, place, thing like been covered recently? And I had a great example, a woman named Sarah Strasbaugh, who was with Godfrey Social PR. They represent a lot of like baby and children's brands, which is a new space for me since having my son a couple months ago. And she reached out and connected with me, and she pitched me this brand called Baby Quip, which is like a sort of like an Airbnb for baby gear when you travel. So very genius idea. And I was very interested in it. And when I just expressed interest, you know, and asked some questions about it, she immediately sent me a gift card to try it out, like no questions asked, like no confirmed assignment required. And she also suggested some angles and publications that she was, you know, hoping to get that might be a fit for me. And then she also shared past stories with links that had covered the brand. And that was just immensely helpful in building a relationship with me, because it really helped me to understand, you know, what are her goals on behalf of her client, and how could that fit into my goals as a freelance writer, you know, starting to cover some topics that reflect my current stage of life, which is, you know, having a young baby. So, I just really appreciated, you know, that exchange that we had. And I wish more PR would do that in, you know, just being transparent about, you know, what are you really trying to accomplish here? I think it also shows that, you know, Sarah in this case was being strategic, right? Like, she was sharing with me, you know, we've never had this type of story on this brand, and I see you write for these outlets. Maybe this would be a fit because they've covered this in this way before. And it just really showed me that she'd done her research on her target publications as well as me, and was coming up with like a creative angle that no one else was currently working on. So that really went a long way toward, you know, me appreciating that relationship and working with her.
You know what stands out to me about all of that too, and maybe Jacqueline, this resonated with you, but we don't have a lot of people suggest that one tip that you mentioned, where I think it happened with Charlotte Berger PR as well. They shared previous stories that had been written about their clients. Mm-hmm. And yeah, we don't get that tip very often, right, Jackie?
Right.
I like it.
I do too.
Yeah.
One other thing along those lines that I like to do, and I think, you know, is useful, is to go on as a journalist and go onto Google News and just search, you know, it's different than just like typing into Google and clicking news, but actually go to like the Google News site and typing in the brand, and then you can sort by date and see like all the recent pieces that have been published on something. And sometimes that gives me a good feel for, you know, whether this PR person is, you know, really being specific in who they're targeting, or if they're just kind of like going out big and everywhere with whatever they're pitching. So sometimes I'll do my own research on that as well and just see like, okay, what else has been covered? What other angles have been around for, you know, this particular thing that they're pitching me? And then that can give me kind of a good idea on whether I want to pursue pitching it as well, just based on like what other stories are out there.
So when you're working with publicists and you are thinking about the relationships that you have with your favorites, what characteristics stand out to you?
Yeah, that's a really great question. The first one is that they're not always pitching, you know, that they're having a relationship with me, whether that's on social media or emailing to check in or sharing something they think I would like, you know, really building a relationship, you know, with journalists is, you know, not that different from having, you know, friendships, right? I mean, mm-hmm. you both put in effort to, you know, maintain and grow that relationship and, you know, things that show you're being thoughtful of the other person. You know, there's definitely PR that I might work with and say, you know, oh, did you see this story? Like, I can't believe this happened. Or I might see, one of my favorite things is if I'm reading an article and I see a brand that I know has been pitched to me, like I'll reach out and say, hey, awesome job on, you know, I saw you that this brand got in a story, you know, celebrating this with you. And they'll do that in return to me too. And it's not always about their clients or something that I'm working on. It's just, you know, being a human first. And I think a big thing too is like paying attention to their personal life on social media, if they have a public Instagram or TikTok or whatever, and how they're presenting their personal brand online. I had so many, you know, different people in the PR industry reach out to me and send, you know, really nice emails about the birth of my son, or send a little, you know, onesie in the mail or something like that. And I'm never suggesting you have to send gifts, but it's just a thoughtful thing to be mindful and, you know, just reach out and say, you know, congratulations, so happy for you, without like attaching a pitch to it, I would say. Or even if you are pitching, you know, just noting something personal that you saw about them, or, you know, asking how they're doing or things like that. I think that that's a really nice thing to do. And one thing I've noticed too is just the outreach from other publicists who are young moms in the same stage of life as me. I think this has been a life change that's been very like relationship building for me professionally as well, just because there's so many levels you can connect on there aside from work, you know, again, just as a human. So that's been really cool as well. And I would say another thing, you know, that is really great to do to build relationships is share the stories that you place on social media and tag the writer. I see a lot of people posting like, oh, you know, here are all our placements for the week, and just tagging the publication or the editor, when a lot of times it's the freelance writer that has done all the work to make that happen. So, you know, just being a cheerleader to freelance writers and, you know, making sure you're tagging them if you're sharing their story, and then, you know, they'll reshare it from their account. But I think just, you know, being mindful that, you know, there was multiple parties involved with every story, writers, editors, and PR is really important.
Yes, I agree. And that's one of my favorite things to do, is just give credit where credit's due on social media. I've been using LinkedIn a lot lately, and I find it a really nice way to keep in touch with journalists and freelancers that way, but without being too annoying as well. But going back to relationship building, and your focus now on pitchcraft, to me, pitchcraft sounds like it's all about community building, and there's a huge community focus there, especially since it's kind of focused on a particular niche, the lifestyle world, right? So tell us more about pitchcraft, and I'd love to know how it came to be too. How do you think of the idea?
Sure. So at Pitchcraft, our kind of our original tagline when we founded the company back in 2021 was there are three sides to every story. And, you know, that's kind of a play on like the old you know, saying about two sides to every story. But we really believe that PR editors and writers are all involved very heavily, of course, in the storytelling process, especially within digital media today. So this all started in 2020. I launched workshops where I would bring on freelance writers to really talk about, you know, what they were working on during the pandemic, how to pitch them, how they were navigating travel, things like that. And that really grew over about a year and a half. And I was really wanting to create a community aspect beyond just these once a week workshops I was hosting. So my husband actually left his corporate job and co-founded this digital platform with me. And we have an entirely custom built site now. And we're a membership platform for PR professionals, primarily small agencies and independent publicists. And we have a lot of different resources within our membership. So we have weekly interviews with freelance writers, helping people to get to know them before pitching. We have monthly workshops with editors from top tier publications, and all of our PR members get to interface with them on Zoom, ask them questions, pitch them live. For instance, we just had one about weddings publications a couple weeks ago, and we had on the weddings editor from the New York Times, Destination I Do, and a writer for Brides. So we really have like curated discussions around different types of topics. And then we also have a lot of other resources, including something called How I Pitch This, which is where a PR professional from outside Pitchcraft comes on and shares kind of their story behind how they earned an amazing placement. We have a dashboard and community where we have a very active community, always posting and helping each other out with different pitches, challenges, contacts, things like that. And then we have a Friday breakout call every Friday at 11. And that has just been a really important part of Pitchcraft for that community building. And since most of our members are independent PR professionals, it just really helps them to feel like they have, you know, a group of colleagues. We really focus on positivity and encouraging news and sharing ideas. It's a very collaborative environment and celebrating wins and helping each other through challenges. So that's kind of just a small sample of what we have within Pitchcraft. But we're just really serious about getting back to the, you know, traditional values of business and building relationships and staying true to your word and reaching out to people where it makes sense and not just filling their inbox with, you know, emails for the sake of your client and things like that. So we've really grown over the past 2 years almost. And yeah, just a lot of exciting things to come.
That's awesome. We always like sharing these kinds of resources with our listeners too, just communities that fellow publicists can engage with and, you know, build relationships the way that makes sense. So thank you for sharing that.
And I do and a key part too is just like the relationships with other people in your industry too, right? I mean, not just journalists and not just editors, but other PR professionals. And one thing that I've always said is like, you never know where someone's going to end up. And there was someone that I worked with, you know, maybe 5 or 6 years ago, who was like an editorial assistant at the Wall Street Journal. And now she's a like big time reporter there. Or we had, it's interesting, we've interviewed 3 different people on Pitchcraft recently who started as publicists and are now freelance writers or editors, including who's a top editor at Domino Magazine. So it's just like, you never know where someone's going to end up. And it really pays to, you know, form those relationships and even friendships with people in your industry.
Yeah, no kidding. That's really cool. So tying into relationship building, I know you've given a few shout outs throughout the episode, but we're wondering, do you have any more shout outs to any publicists that you think do a good job in the industry?
Oh my gosh, I feel like all my friends are publicists, so this is a hard question for me.
you can name whoever you want, as many as you'd like.
So I would say I love all the PR professionals at LDPR, at Bread and Butter, Turner. Some of my go-to people I feel like are others who have kind of grown their careers alongside me, like when we kind of started out at the same time, and you know, they've grown as I've grown. Mackenzie Comer is with Lou Hammond. She's a great friend. Brian Chan with Sunshine Saks. Campbell Levy now just moved over to Lou Hammond, but he's, you know, really a trusted colleague of mine, always sharing intel and ideas. Kat Taylor with Birdhouse is another person I always love working with. There's just so many independent PR professionals. I mean, all of my members within Pitchcraft, they're amazing. There's way too many to name here, but you know, I think that these independent PR pros are like some of the hardest working out there, and just I really give them a lot of credit, you know, for being a one man or one woman show and making the magic happen for their clients.
Thank you for listening to this episode of We Earn Media. Jacqueline and I have a bit of a favor to ask. If you find the podcast useful and have an extra minute or two to spare, we would be incredibly grateful if you could take just a moment to leave a rating. Your feedback means the world to us, and it helps others discover our show. Thank you so much, listeners, for being a part of our PR community, and we can't wait to hear what you think. Also, I'm excited to announce that I'm offering publicity and PR coaching sessions starting this fall. I've been getting a few requests for this kind of support, and I'm excited to finally make it official. If you're a startup founder, someone trying to build your personal brand, or simply just trying to level up your PR skills, I would love to help. It's something I'm really passionate about, and it's really fun just to connect with others in the community too. Feel free to send me a message at brit@britclance.com or fill out the Google form in today's episode show notes. Thanks again, listeners, for your time and for sharing in this journey with us.